The Future of Teamwork is a Leader production. Subscribe today and never miss an episode.
You can't do anything wrong. You can't do anything wrong. You literally can't. You can only do what you do, and it has whatever consequences it has, but you can't do anything wrong.
Welcome to The Future of Teamwork. My name is Dane Gruneveld, and today I'm joined by Calvin Corelli, the founder and CEO of Simplero. So welcome to the show, Calvin.
Thank you, Dane. It's great to be here. I am actually an actual Dane. Ha. How about that?
Wow, there you go.
How about that?
Real Dane. I'm the fake Dane.
Yep. Yeah. Born and raised in Denmark and now made my way to Malibu, California.
Cool. I didn't even catch that before the show. But you did your studies here in the US?
I did not. No.
You did not. There you go.
No, I studied computer science back in Copenhagen. Actually, not even Copenhagen, Aarhus, which is second largest city in Denmark.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to dive into all facets of you and your identity and the work that you're doing. But like, where do we get started? How can we catch up on the important work that you're doing now?
Oh, great question. I built a software company called Simplero, and I've been doing that for 16, almost 17 years now, actually. I've been the same business, and I love it. Bootstrap, no funding, no investors, no nothing. Just me and a keyboard, and now, you know, thousands of customers. I think the totality of all the customers on Simplero have made, the latest number I saw was $856 million.
Like, wow.
That's not nothing. It's not nothing. That's pretty cool to know that I had a small part in like helping that many people make that much money and the impact that goes with that, right?
Yeah.
So it's pretty sweet. Yeah.
It's neat. Has the focus always been in the coaching world? You've always been like enabling coaches to do more work with their coachees?
That's a great question, because this kind of work, like back when I started, it was called information marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of got a bad rap as people were like, you know, it felt like make money online, kind of like internet spammy, scammy type stuff. And there's definitely a lot of that going on. We can dive into that too.
Yeah.
And then it kind of changed, like that phrase went out of vogue and then nothing ever replaced it. So now it's like course creator, consultant, coach, creator, like service-based business, whatever. Like it's really, we're for all of it. Like it started with courses, but now what I lead with is coaching, because like most people are coaches and like, oh, they see themselves as coach in some way or another.
Yeah.
But it's really all of the above. I like to say it's like Shopify, but without the physical goods. Anything that you're selling
that's cool.
Not physical. Like Simplero is your platform. And it's even way like more than Shopify, because Shopify is more like the core. And then there are all these apps, where Simplero is more like literally everything.
Fully native.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not, we're not a reseller of like high level, and you're like, we're actually wrote the code and maintain the whole thing.
That's super cool. And I'm still pretty new into my life of working with coaches, providing coaches to customers, recommending coaches, therapy. I know it's a continuum of sorts, business consultants. Like I would say in the last 3 to 5 years post-COVID, I've dived in pretty heavily. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be so many different flavors of, you know, who you pick to do work with you when you have a particular moment that you're going through it as a team member or as a leader. Or as an individual, you know, is there a particular area of coaching or consulting where you found there to be a sweet spot or where your energy's coming from right now, Calvin?
For my own work or for our members on Simplero?
For the members that you're, you know, bringing impact to.
Anything health is probably the number one niche for us. Like a lot of health coaches, fitness coaches, like a lot of natural healing. And so I think a lot of people, then when they have health issues, they realize that this system is broken. And then they start to figure out their own thing. And then they naturally want to help others, whether it's with diet or meditation and mindset or whatever it is that they find that cures their ailment, they naturally want to share it. And that if you zoom out from that, that's generally the journey, right? Like, I talk about the two heroes' journeys of coaching. The first is that you figure something out, whether it's weight loss or a health crisis or getting pregnant or starting a business or healing your relationship after a breakup or like whatever, finding the right partner, whatever it is, right? You figure something out and now you're like, I want it. Like, that was so hard. I worked so hard to figure this out. Like, all the information, there's all this conflicting information. Everybody has an opinion. You try all these experts. It's cost me so much money, so much time, so much agony, so many sleepless nights where I wasn't sure if it was ever going to work out, all of that stuff. I figured it out. Now I want to teach that to others. I want to help others on that same journey. And you're like, I'm just going to put up a website and open my doors and people are going to like stampede to my freaking house because this is so valuable and I worked so hard for this. And then you do and you realize, no, that's not what happens. Like, nobody knows you exist. And that's when you start your second hero's journey, which is, oh, shit, now I got to figure out how to sell this thing. Now I got to figure out how to attract clients, how to present it in a way that resonates with them, how to make offers, how to get traffic, get attention, enroll people, all of that. And how to actually build a business that destroy me and burn me out.
Yeah, big time. Well, that's really fascinating. So the part that's really resonating for me, Calvin, is this piece around like mental, physical, spiritual health. It's interesting because a lot of the work that I've tended to come in and do with teams, it always ends up there. It doesn't always start there, but that's always kind of like where you land at the end of it, whether you're successful or not. There's always an impact. And often if you are successful, you're improving it on the way to the business results. So that is interesting. And I like this two heroes journey, the like the for myself hero's journey and then the for others, which is, you know, the scale part and spreading that good work is really, it's tricky. Yeah. So, that's very cool.
Yeah. And really the way I look at it is everything is downstream from light. That's kind of how I look at life is like, healthcare is a good example again. Like, we think it's about like whatever the IBS, the stomach, gastrointestinal, whatever that is, or like nobody has good digestion in this country. Like everybody has issues. Like everybody has issues there. Everybody has trouble getting pregnant too. Like, it's like, what's going on here? Yeah. Like, there's something there, but like wherever that disease shows up, it's not random, but it's just the weakest link in the chain. And what it's downstream of is how much light am I, or another way to say it is how much life am I allowing to enter into my being? And that's where we get into the mind bugs, because the core thing that keeps the life and the light out of you is your mind bugs. So,
all right.
Let me break it down. Like, if we all know this person who is like, I'm just, this is wrong, this is dumb, I'm like that kind of thing, right? The whole thing is just contracted. There's no room for any light. And you're like, but what about this? Have you seen the sun is shining? It's a beautiful day. And hey, let me give you this coffee or something. Like, you know, they're just committed to being in that state, right? If you stay in that state long enough, you're gonna get sick. Whether it's like a pooping issue or whether it's like a heart issue, or like, it doesn't matter. It's going to be some issue. And then we go get some chemicals or do some cuts and surgery and what, like, but it's not about that. It's about that, right? And so think about it, just like, how much love, light, love, joy, life am I allowing to enter into my being? And everything else is derivative of that. Not just health. Yeah. But also your business and your relationships and everything is a derivative of that.
Yeah, how I feel before and after a surf, like it all connects, doesn't it?
Exactly, right? That's where you're tapping into source. And so the mind bugs are these core identity level lies that we buy into that disconnects us from the source, from the truth. So we walk around thinking like that, yo, hey, I'm Dane, I'm Calvin, I'm this age, I was born here, I do this, like this is me, I need this, I need to make some more money, I need to fix this health issue, I need blah, blah, blah. We identify with this physical body and with this timeline, this name, this story, what happened to us. Oh, it's because my mom didn't love me the right, like all of that stuff, right? And we look to our circumstances for, oh, I need this, I need that, then I'll be happy. Did that ever work? No, it freaking didn't. All right. But it'll work this time, I promise, right?
Yeah.
But the truth is that who you are is just pure spirit, pure consciousness, pure life. That's who you are. You were never born. You will never die. None of that is real. And so the mind bugs are the things that come in and insert themselves and makes us believe in that we're this isolated little piece, little individual. And so there are things like, I'm not enough. It's a very common one. I'm not enough. Yeah. Everybody has the disease of not enough. Yeah. And it won't show up as like a thought that says, oh, I'm not enough. I'm not enough. It's not a conscious thought. It's just how you see yourself. And so when you see yourself as not enough, what are you going to do? You're going to try to be more. Try to be better. Oh, if only I had more money, then I would feel like I was enough. If only I had bigger muscles, I would feel like I was enough. If I had a bigger car, if I had, you know, 10 girlfriends or lovers or whatever, then I'd feel enough. If I had enough degrees, I would feel like whatever it is. Yeah. If I had more children, I would feel enough. More dogs, I would feel enough. Like whatever. But it's going to be something, right?
It is something. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. One of the books that I've been most moved by recently, it was Jennifer Brahaney Wallace's book called Never Enough. And it was about toxic overachievement culture here placed upon our youth. And playing back what you've just shared, it said a lot of young people are growing up right now here in America and around the world, but America is particularly good at this. And they're attaching their value, their sense of worth to what did I score in my quiz last week? How well did I bat in baseball at the weekend? Did I pass my grade 6 piano exam? And it's all about doing and not being. And so it's like, we need to get back to just embracing, going back to your point, the pure spirit, the natural form of these young humans that we're bringing forward in the world, and not their results, their outcomes.
Right. Exactly. 100%. And it comes from the parents too, right? Because it's just how we all operate in the world.
It's generational trauma.
like way back, right? But it's how our mind is wired. And so we'll naturally look there. Like whenever we have like an ick of some sort, like some little gnawing void-like feeling, like we'll instantly, completely automatically look to circumstance for the cause. Oh, it's cause this. And then we'll look to fix it in circumstance when it's never about that.
So what is it about?
It's in here. It's the feeling. It's something that's coming to the surface that wants to be felt, be been with. Because everything in your circumstance is a reflection of the mind. Everything in your life, in your circumstances, in your material world is a reflection of what's in your mind, not the other way around. But we pick it up. We mix it up. We do it in reverse. It's like if you're watching a movie and you're sitting there on the laptop or the TV and at home watching Netflix and whatever, and you're pissed at what's happening in this movie. And you're like, this is dumb. And then you go up on the movie screen and you start to paint with crayons because you're like, this is idiot. No, he should be over here. And that's like, no, dude, that's not how it works. Like what you see on the screen is not where it's coming from. Hey, this is all recording coming from somewhere else. Like, that's what you need to fix. You need to edit, like go into Final Cut or a Premiere or whatever and edit the thing. That's how you do it. But that's not how we do it. We start, you know, painting on the freaking screen.
Very, very surface level, symptomatic.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm curious, Dane, you were talking about like midlife crisis. What's going on for you? Where are you at?
I'm intrigued by where my mind bugs are. Let's play this out real time. So I feel like I've lived a very blessed life. I'm in my mid-40s now, grew up in Australia and England, came to America, married an American wife, my wife Claire, a Texan. So I've spent a lot of time in the oil and gas industry, worked with people from all different cultures. sold a business last year. So it felt like, going back to identity, it felt like 20, 25 years of work in like building myself in that space kind of came to an end when we sold the business. So yes, there was a moment of excitement, but then there was a void of like, well, who am I now? Yeah. And that happened to coincide with a decision we'd made in life, which is we're going to have a fourth baby. So a little bit later in life. So I've now got a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 9-month-old. And we're just, my wife and I are just sitting here, interestingly, thinking about some of these questions and saying, well, who do we want to be and how do we want to show up now? We've been given this huge opportunity to be a little bit more intentional about how we live and how we raise these kids now. And as we go about that, we're finding that actually the space to consider identity and to make some of those choices is somewhat jarring. And that when we try and do things, we feel like there's like maybe a constraint or something pulling us back into a way of viewing or valuing a particular decision or a way of doing something. So there's just a little bit of swirl, which on one hand...
So how does that show up? How does that materialize? What's an example, concrete?
A concrete example would be we're starting a new co-working space business here in our town locally. We want to create more connection in the community. Mm-hmm. And it should be something that's very like free and embracing of all of the opportunities of like people we can work with and experiences we can create. And yet we're creating urgency and pressure on doing it in certain ways. And it's creating like stress and burden in our lives. And we're like, why is that? And what are we striving for here? And what's getting in the way there?
Got it. So what's an example of something that you're adding pressure around?
A simple example might be like coming up with the name and the logo for the space. Mm-hmm. There's a need, there's like a drive to get it right and to get it right first time and get quickly and get moving rather than to just kind of live with it and see what emerges. That might be one good example.
Yeah. So walk me through the process. Like, are you sitting down with your wife, sitting, having a conversation about a name or?
Yeah, it's interesting. And this is where AI may be coming in too, by the way, because I know you and I were talking about that pre-show. But with AI, the cool thing is you can process, you know, 10 times, 100 times the materials and the ideas all at once. But that doesn't mean you land on a final idea. So I feel like over the course of the last 4 to 6 weeks, we've looked at different properties, different partners, different logos, and we're putting it all into ChatGPT and Claude and getting feedback and not really pausing to kind of let that breathe or go and get feedback from other real humans that we're trying to create this thing with, but rather like bouncing off a very small group of people to say, well, how does that work for you and what's your reflection on this? And there's this strange urgency and almost like a FOMO even starting to creep in, like if we don't get this right, we'll miss the opportunity. So there's some kind of weird programming in there that probably more so for me than my wife, that's just like popping as we go through what should be, after the past 20 something years of my career, a pretty simple side hustle that is energy giving, not energy draining.
Yeah. All right. So I hear two themes here. Two mind bugs going on. One is this notion that you got to get it right.
Yeah.
That the name, you got to get it right.
Yeah.
Which, if you have to get it right, what does that imply?
You can't fail.
Yeah. And if you have to get it right, what does that mean? What's the alternative?
Getting it wrong, not being good enough.
Yeah. Getting it wrong, right? So that means you could do it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you look back, have you done anything wrong in your life?
Many things wrong, but I wouldn't say they were ever at the major moments or milestones.
Right. But this pattern of like, gotta get it right, gotta get it right. Like where is that familiar?
You know, it's hard not to over intellectualize this and just kind of lean into the feelings of it. But I think, you know, growing up as a kid in a family that moved around a lot, and we were going in and trying to establish ourselves in new schools and new communities, there was a lot of pressure on landing, being seen to be, you know, good people in the new community, getting grades, joining the sports team. So I would say from early on in life, I was jumping into a lot of those moments.
Perfect.
So there's probably something there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like the stakes were kind of high, right? Because if you do it wrong and you say the wrong thing or behave in the wrong way, or you're not seen, you're seen in the wrong way, what will happen? What would happen if you did,
You might get ostracized. You become an outsider. Right. You don't get the opportunities that you were used to having in your past school or social community.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, rejection, ostracized. Exactly. That's painful.
Yeah,
for anybody, especially for a little boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get that. The stakes are high.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So you think that's a mind bug that's kind of just been programmed in there into my identity over 40 years. Mm-hmm. And then when I go and do something that should be freeing, it's still just pulling me back in.
1,000%. And we all have all the mind bugs in some version. It's just that some, like, it's the ranking. It's like, which are more prominent and how do they show up? For me, this one was huge for me too. I did it wrong. I like all kinds of things in my life that I did wrong. Big things, small things. I like walked the dog wrong, or like I got out of bed wrong. Or I made a noise and that woke my wife and that was wrong. Or like anything could be wrong. Like I ate the wrong thing. And then typically there's two, when you're in like, fuck, I did it wrong. It goes typically two places. A, that means I'm not going to be okay.
Yeah.
Right. Now I ate the wrong thing. Now I'm going to be fat. Oh, shit. Yeah. That's bad. Or like, now, like, whatever. I'm going to be sick or something. Right.
Yeah.
Or it means I'm bad.
Yes.
Oh, there's something wrong with me that I did this. This is revealing.
And then you're worried about like separation from the herd and all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Have you ever done anything wrong?
Yeah. Tons of things.
Yeah. Give me one.
Terribly managed the termination of an employee who I respected and it was
okay. So if you were to do it over today, you would do it differently.
100%.
Yeah. At the moment you did it, could you have done anything different?
At the moment I did it, I think the outcome was clear for everyone, but the methods were poorly executed because if I reflect back on that one, I was trying to find a win-win solution that was fair for everyone, and that wasn't viable. So I actually made it more complicated and more painful. It was kind of the old saying, if you try to please everyone, you please no one. That was a good example of that particular moment.
I think we can all relate. I can, for sure.
Yeah.
And could you have done anything different in that moment?
I personally couldn't have, because I didn't have the capability or the mind space, I don't believe.
So did you do anything wrong?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Not intentionally.
No.
Yeah.
It's like wrong is a judgment.
Yeah.
That we overlay on it after. And the only reason that you are even capable of overlaying that judgment on the past is what?
Reflection, regret.
The fact that you've grown, the fact that now you know more than you did. You're a different person than you were.
Interesting.
But the person, you're wiser, right? But the person that you were in that moment couldn't have done any different.
Yes.
And when you realize this, that literally none of what you ever did was wrong. You did what you did, and it had certain consequences. And some of those consequences you liked, and some of those consequences you didn't like.
Yeah.
But when you take the judgment out of it, then you can just deal with the mechanics of it, the physics of it. Oh, here's a person who is upset, and I did something that, in retrospect, I regret doing that, and like I wish I would have done it differently, but I couldn't. I did the best that I could, and now what do I do with it? How do I deal with it? Right?
Yeah.
But it becomes physics rather than this emotional, this judgment thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that is fascinating. And so when you approach some of that growth or reflection, affirmation, whatever you might want to call it, do you tend to do that, particularly with sort of your ecosystem of providers, in more of a whole of body way versus just a traditional, you know, talk therapy or coaching?
I mean, we just talk, but people tend to start crying at some point. Like, it's like their body gets involved at some point, but we just talk. So the beautiful thing is, once you realize, though, that none of what you did was ever wrong. What does that mean about the future?
Oh, interesting. So therefore, nothing that I do next is wrong either, because the growth is ahead of the action.
Exactly. You can't do anything wrong. You can't do anything wrong. You literally can't. You can only do what you do, and it has whatever consequences it has, but you can't do anything wrong.
That's quite freeing.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't fuck it up.
So Marcus Buckingham talked a lot about feedback, and this reminds me of this. And he said, we need to remove judgment in our feedback cycles at work. Mm-hmm. I think the same is true in family. You know, if I get upset with my 14-year-old son, I'll often layer judgment in where I just need to be like, hey, that didn't work. Can we just go and do it differently? And he said, we need to talk more to energy rather than judgment. Hey, I found it really draining that you did it this way, and I've already shown you how to do that in the past.
And this applies to you too. So when you do talk to your son and you overlay judgment, remove the judgment from yourself for doing that.
For both. Interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you're fucking human. We all judge. That's how we work. Yeah. We're all judging all the time. Yeah. Like, it would be crazy if we didn't, right? Like.
Yeah, yeah. That's very cool.
Otherwise, that just ends up being more of the same, right? You're just making yourself wrong again for having judged. Like, no. You're just going
to
do it.
So the burden comes with the feeling of being wrong, and that starts to manifest in all sorts of ways.
It's a judgment, right? In general, like, anytime we judge anything that it should be anything other than what it is, we're fucking insane. Because nothing is other than what it is in this fucking moment. It is exactly the way it is. And if you think it should be different, you're mad. You're out of your mind.
Yeah.
So here's the cool thing. So if you've never done anything wrong, you can't do anything wrong. You can't fuck it up. For you, the prescription, though, would be fuck up more.
Fantastic.
Exactly. Because you learned from an early age, oh, I gotta monitor myself. I got to filter myself here. Make sure I do it right. Join the right sports teams. Like, show up well-behaved, get good grades, like, participate in the right way, So that's still part of you. And I think this is the core of your midlife crisis that you talked about.
Interesting. Right?
That's the core. Like, you're just like, I can't do this anymore. It's tiring. It's exhausting to live this way. And ultimately, it's going to cause disease at some point, because it's just your body, your entire body is in a nervous system is a constant state of, like, vigilance. Like,
vigilance
monitoring. Right. What comes out of your mouth, or what behaviors, what you do so that you be the, you know, acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
If I put my employer's hat on and say, Dane works for so-and-so, right? Is there a risk that, let's say, my boss, Jenny, is sitting there going, oh, I'm afraid to tell Dane to go fuck up more. He's going to feel like he's got a license to do whatever he wants in this company.
I often tell my team members that, like, you need to make more mistakes. Yeah. I'm going to be really pissed with you if you don't go more. I am.
It's fascinating. We had a lady that reminds me, we had Leanne Davey come onto our show. She was up out of I believe Toronto, and she had this thing, which was when she checked in with team members, she'd be like, where did you fuck up in the last 90 days?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's actually reflect on that. Mm-hmm. Because maybe she's able to remove judgment, but she's also maybe able to capture the learning and the wisdom that came from that moment. So it is interesting.
Well, and just in general,
its raw form. Yeah.
If you don't fuck up, if you don't make mistakes, you're just not trying enough things.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you will never find the line if you're always, like, if you're so scared of ever hitting the line, you will always keep a safe buffer to the line. So in order to find where the line is, you have to cross the line.
Yeah.
Like, in order to know what you're capable of or what the right thing, like, you have to make quote unquote mistakes. And of course, there's going to be a point where an employer is going to say, hey, that's too many mistakes.
Yeah.
Again, it's not a judgment. It's not that you're wrong or you did anything wrong. Your employer's just saying, hey, this doesn't work for what I need in this role. is not personal, right? And so,
yeah,
you know, might not be a fit. That's fine. Hey. Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah. Do you, as you think that through, Calvin, this encouragement of mistakes, it does feel freeing. How do you then create language around that? You know, not so much in the one-to-one, but like in the team member to team member. Because a good friend of mine, Eric's always talked about like circles of leadership, these invisible circles. And to be a better leader or be a better team member, you do have to keep stepping over these lines, using your analogy. Mm-hmm. But do you need to kind of create awareness that you're going to be stepping over lines with employees so they don't feel like you're an absolute rogue or maverick?
The way I think of it is in a very organic way. So for me, the conversation will usually be in more of a one-on-one, but it could also be like in a smaller group where it's just like, hey, especially thinking of my assistant, Danielle, who's awesome. I love her so much. She's a lifesaver for me. She's incredible. And she's scared of fucking up. She's scared of making mistakes. And so for me, every time she does make a mistake, I will tell her, I will let her know so she has the feedback, but it's a cause for celebration.
Yeah.
Because she just, and she knows this, and we have this conversation. It's just like, she needs to, be more free around it. Like, as soon as it gets stressful, right? Where it's like, oh, fuck, I can't make a mistake. I can't make a mistake. Like, that makes you less effective at anything.
Yeah.
Because now you're construing like 20% of your mental bandwidth is like, I can't make a mistake. I can't make a mistake. So you're operating.
Yeah, true.
70%, yeah. Whatever it is, right? So like, no, let's stop that. And then usually we had another member of our admin team had a similar thing. The way that it was for her was she was so scared of making a mistake that she would constantly bug the other team members to help them, to have them help her. Like, hey, can you look at this? I'm not sure. Can you help me figure this? Like, to the point where just, look, it's not working. And so we gave her the prescription, like, and this is my admin team doing that amongst themselves, like, fuck up more, make mistakes, it's fine, it doesn't matter, like, it actually does matter, we want you to make more mistakes, you know,
yeah,
take chances. But it wasn't working for her, and so she didn't last on the team, you know?
Yeah, I get it. And there's a time and a season for this for different people, I would imagine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and different people need different prescriptions, right? Other people just need to like actually cross their T's and dot their I's and be a little bit more careful and mindful. But again, we don't need to do it in a judgy way. And I'm no saint. I will definitely get like irritated and judgy at times, but I also do it with a, hey, like, I don't want to make anyone wrong for this. And like, I will own my own shit and be like, hey, sometimes I get hot headed. I'm sorry about that, whatever. But let's just like let's learn from it and talk about that, right? So I don't shame people in that way, but it's like what's needed. I do want to touch on Dane though,
because
the other piece, the other mind bug that I picked up on with you, with the co-working space, is the notion that there's somewhere to get to.
Interesting. So tell me more about that.
This is another one of those where, like, almost all of us are living under the illusion that there's somewhere to get to.
Yeah.
Right? When I have this co-working space up and running and we got 100 members, or when I get married, or when I hit $1 million, or when I get this health thing sorted, or when I, whatever, find a partner or have a baby, like, whatever, then, like, but it's like what it is, it's a subtle energy of like, this isn't it.
Interesting.
This moment right now, this life that I'm living right now, it's not quite it.
Which is pretty sad if you think about, if you pause and think. You've got this pure spirit and light and you're like, this isn't it.
Yeah. And so we're so eager to get there.
Right. Yeah. A good mentor of mine, Rick Eigenbro, talked about doing the, I forget the trail, but it's in Spain and you end up at this big cathedral at the end. And he said, the journey was wonderful. And when they, Camino, that's it.
Yeah.
And when he got there at the end into the plaza, that this wave of sadness came over him that the journey was over. Actually, the journey was the magic part.
Always, right? Always. Yeah. And it's like what you experience with your exit. Every founder that I've ever known that had an exit, everybody gets depressed.
Yeah.
Everyone. It just happens.
And that's the identity getting shaken loose.
Totally. Identity, yeah. Friendships, connections. You are like in the team. One of my friends is a former Navy SEAL. And if you ask him, his favorite moments in life that he cherishes the most are in Iraq, stuck in the mud under a Humvee, under enemy fire, under sniper fire. And like that's his...
Connected to his team. Yeah.
So connected, right?
Yeah.
Such a powerful drive, which is also why this whole rejection being ostracized is equally powerful in the opposite way.
Right? Correct.
Huge drive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is fascinating.
But this notion, like, not quite there, not this isn't it. Like, it's a way to resist being where we are, which is the only place we can ever be.
Yeah.
And the only place we have power.
Yeah.
Can we remove ourselves from that moment? And then we jump into our imaginary mind and imagine some place in the future. But here's the kicker. We will pretty much always have two things simultaneously. We have the part of us that wants to be in that reality that we imagine. And then we have the part of us that is terrified of it and don't want it.
Yeah.
And then we can feel very comfortable to be like not really here, pretending like you're working towards some future that you actually kind of don't want because you're conflicted about it. And this is just the state of being for most humans. What we know, and like I've done a lot of body work. There's a company or therapy form in Denmark, which I go do several times a year called Body SDS. But what you find experientially, just like practically experiencing it in your own body, is that the mind and the body are not separate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing as like a disembodied mind. So like what you're thinking is influenced what you eat by what you eat for lunch.
Yes.
Right. Like it's all one organism. It's all one system. And like your thoughts impact your body and your body impact your thoughts. It's like it's a two-way system. It's one integrated system. They're not separated. But what happens with AI is we took this tiny, tiny, tiny part of our being and we made a computer do that. And then we're saying it's smarter than humans. Bull fucking crap, right? Because humans are so much more than that, because who are we? We're awareness, we're consciousness, we're spirit. Does that thing have that? No, it don't. It freaking don't. No. It's a tool. It's an awesome tool. I love AI. And it is, I think it has the potential to either distract us more from who we are, ADHD style, right? Just get lost in it and psychosis and all that stuff, or to help us reveal and help us be more of who we really are as humans. And I subscribe to the latter one, but it's not the individual, right? And so most people are probably going to use AI to do the same thing. But for those of us who actually want to be here and want to be more of who we are, it's an incredible gift.
Yeah, I subscribe to the latter as far as what I want to see in the world for my children and people I love. I agree with you. I'm seeing a lot more of the former. I was actually having a conversation with my brother last night, and I was like, it's not what the AI tells you to do that is important. It's the lenses that it gives you. You know, if you understand why it's telling you to do something, they're the questions, going back to how you just ran me through those mind bugs. They're the questions to sit and ponder on, because it's bringing things up that already exist more into focus for you to be thinking about and talking to other people about.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing about AI is that it's disembodied and it's not in reality. Like you and I, we can, when we talk about, I have the ocean out here, right?
Yeah.
We can look at the ocean and we know what it is. You know what it's like to be out there on your surfboard and feel the ocean waves over your body and be in flow with, you know what it feels.
Yeah.
The LLM has no fucking clue, but it can describe the experience as good as anybody.
Yeah.
But it's just words. It's just symbols. It's just bits and bytes. It has no reference point in reality.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to remember that. It doesn't know shit. It really doesn't. It just manipulates words. But it's like, if I say ocean, you and I know what it means.
Yes.
Because we experience it. It doesn't.
Yeah.
The AI doesn't know what the fuck it means.
So that therein lies some of the inherent threat danger on over-reliance.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what we're doing in Simplero with AI is like for when you're doing like whether it's your coaching calls or your courses or anything, as soon as you upload it, we transcribe it. And then that transcription we use for the AI. So now you can go in this course and be like, hey, summarize the key points. Or where is it? I remember him talking about an exercise where he did that. Where is that that he's describing that? What are the details? And it'll bring that. Or because we built our own kind of wrapper for AI stuff, we call it Simplero Coach, Simplero.coach, yeah. Free for anybody to use. Where now you use that to work on your stuff. There's a mind debugging mode in there, or you just work on your projects that you're working on. So now it knows me and it knows my projects and knows my background, my personality, my interests, all these things. And now I have this course or this coaching program. Now I can say, hey, how does this apply to what I'm working on over here?
Right? Fascinating. So it starts to match.
Exactly.
And it's a second brain of sorts.
Exactly. And it's so good at that. But the thing it doesn't have, of course, is human judgment. So that's what we need to supply, right?
Yeah. And but final question for you, because you are talking about mind and body, and I've really enjoyed the way you've layered this conversation, Calvin. I feel like I'm on your show, not you're on mine. But here's the final question. A number of my friends in the coaching and therapy world will explain that chemistry, human chemistry, really matters when you're getting into some of this work. Whether it's fitness coaching, whether it's spiritual, whether it's business coaching, how do you see AI kind of creating more time and space for the human chemistry, whether that's in person or on screen?
Exactly like that. So if you're, I talk about coaching 1.0, coaching 2.0, and coaching 3.0. So the way I think about it is like, if you think of coaching 1.0 as like just one-on-one coaching, you sit and talk, great. There's no leverage, but we can obviously go deep.
Yeah.
2.0 is where we do it in a group format. So the cool thing about that is that things can start to bounce around the room. Dane says something, ask a question. I respond to that in a way this other person like, oh my God, that applies to me, but here's my nuance on it. I'm like, that's cool. We talk about that. Now Dane gets an insight. He's like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. That's a cool. And then the third and the fourth, and like it starts to bounce around. And for me, obviously as a coach, it's a very leveraged way to do it, right?
Yeah.
The whole thing is recorded. So now like other people can find it, especially because it's transcribed and there's AI. Now this becomes a whole library that you can go in and you can ask questions and it'll pull from all of these coaching calls. So there's
super cool.
And that's 3.0. So the 3.0 is with the AI added in, where now it becomes like the AI is the thing that helps you extract the value from it. So I, as a coach, do the same work. I show up every week for 90 minutes to do my group coaching as I do. But now there is AI to help mine that for the gold for eternity. And so you can go into a specific coaching call and be like, exactly what did Calvin say about this thing? Or you can just ask through the whole body of work and insights. And I think exactly what you're saying, like people don't buy coaching for the information, right? The information is there. And even pre-AI, you could Google it, right? Now it's just you ChatGPT it or Grok it or whatever you do.
Yeah.
It's a more efficient way to get an information, but you're still going to get information. Like if you Google it, if you Grok it, you're going to get four different answers, whatever. Like what's the right answer? What's the right answer for you in your context? Like, plus, like, we all know this feeling of like, oh yeah, I've heard this 100 times before, but the way that you said it really hit home, right? So there's so much nuance to this. And so it allows humans to do what humans do best. I believe that at the end of the day, we're all a transmission. Like it's not it's something coming through me that I'm just a channel for. And when used right, AI frees me up to be in the flow of that.
Yeah.
And that's where the magic happens. That's what humans can do that the AI can never do.
Yeah. That's a great point to end on too. Just being more free to be in that flow, to be transmitting that, light source, whatever you want to call it. your superpowers. That's super cool. Well, Calvin, it's been an awesome conversation today. If any of our listeners want to find out more about the Simplero platform or dive into Mindbugs, where do they find you?
Go to Simplero.com and check out Simplero if you're in that business, right? If you're a coach or consultant or course creator or service-based business or any of that stuff, like, come on over. We're awesome. And for me, for my stuff in the Mindbugs, I think Instagram is the best place. Go to it's just my name, Calvin Corelli, Correli, two R's, one L, Calvin Corelli on Instagram, and then hit me up and say you found me on the Future of Teamwork and say what resonated. Just hit me up, send me a message.
Awesome. That sounds great, Calvin. Well, thanks so much for your time today. I look forward to continuing some of these conversations going forward.
Thanks, Dane. It was fun to be with you.
Likewise.
Just a quick note before we go. The views and opinions shared in this episode are those of our guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, Dane Gruneveld, the Leader Group, our patron Huddle 3, or our partners and affiliates. Any scenarios discussed are for the purpose of fueling creative thinking and conversation and should be viewed only in this context. Dane, Leader, our sponsors, partners, and affiliates do not endorse any guest or any organization they may be associated with. It's important to remember that every workplace is as individual as the people within it. Our recommendation is to always seek solutions that are specifically designed to help serve your team's unique needs. And to this point, please know we're here, ready to help you find the best way forward, no matter where your starting point is. You can connect with Dane or myself, Alicia McCraw, on LinkedIn or via the links contained in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. And hey, if you think someone in your network would benefit from this episode, feel free to share it or give us a 5-star rating. Those 5 little stars really help us reach more curious people like you. We'll catch you next time on the Future of Teamwork.